This is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites interlude.hk and dictionary.com. Question number one, which famous composer almost became a mass shooter? Was that A, Ludwig van Beethoven? Was that B, Hector Berlioz? Was it C, Irving Berlin? Or was it D, Johannes Brahms? Hint, this composer's last name starts with the letter B. So who is that wannabe killer composer anyway? And question number two, what is the background to the name of our current month, June? Was it A, the Anglo-Saxons called June Letha, meaning calm or mild? Was it B, June is named after the Roman goddess Juno? Was it C, Junius, as the month was originally known, was the fourth month of the year in the 10-month calendar? Or is it D, all of the above, A, B, and C, are true facts about the month of June? So, the genesis of the month of June, what is that background anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 7th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1962, that Tony Bennett made his debut in Carnegie Hall. That was 1962 today. And it was 31 years ago today that the groundbreaking ceremony was held for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in Cleveland, Ohio. That was 1993 today. Beethoven's Fifth introduces our classical music news. It's titled, Exuberant Conductor Knocks the Rare Violin Out of Soloist's Hand in Concerto Nightmare. A flourish of the baton from this conductor was meant to cue an oboe, but something far more dramatic happened, resulting in a quote-unquote heart attack moment for a soloist on stage. This is published on the 28th of May, 2024, by Kyle MacDonald in ClassicFM.com. One of the world's leading violin virtuosos had a heart-in-mouth moment as his beloved violin was accidentally bumped out of his hands during a performance of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. Star Czech violinist Pavel Sporci was playing at a 60th anniversary concert for the Mladá Boleslav Chamber Orchestra when conductor Marko Ivanovic extended his baton to his left to cue the end of the first movement. To the horror of everyone present, Marco's baton can be seen clipping the violin, sending it tumbling out of the soloist's hands and hurtling towards the floor. The soloist, with his wits about him, managed to stick out his foot to cushion the instrument's fall. Remarkably, the violin remained intact, and a quick strum of the strings confirmed it was still in tune, and the concerto could continue as intended. Only sheer luck and my lightning-quick reactions prevented the situation, which could have resulted in a huge tragedy, the violinist said afterwards. Fortunately, in this case, nothing major happened, except for the heart attack I almost got from it. Sporci's violin is made by contemporary Czech violin maker Jan Spiedlin and has been gaining international renown due to its unique shape and striking blue color. Sporci visited Classic FM in 2022 to show off the beauty of the instrument in both look and tone. Pavel Sporci and his violin will be starring at London's Queen Elizabeth Hall this November. He'll be performing Dvorak's Violin Concerto with the English Chamber Orchestra under new principal guest conductor Roberto Vasis. Let's hope there are no unexpected baton collisions between conductor and soloist in that concert. George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue introduces our jazz music news. 100 years ago, Rhapsody in Blue changed the classical game. Was it for the better? This is written by Jim Beckerman, NorthJersey.com, on the 9th of February, 2024. First, there was a clarinet trill, like a cat shaking off sleep. Then the cat stretched itself from a low F to a high B-flat, and the world of concert music changed forever. That shock opening of Rhapsody in Blue, the nasty glissando that had no business in a temple of the arts, electrified audiences 100 years ago this week. That's when the George Gershwin classic got its first performance at Aeolian, New York's Hall, February the 12th, 1924. Apart from the first four notes of Beethoven's Fifth, it's likely the single most familiar opening phrase in classical music, and it still challenges students today. It's hard for a classical player like me, said clarinetist Donald Mokrinsky, who teaches at the JCC Thurnauer School of Music and plays with the Palisades Virtuosi, which he also co-founded. It's almost a way of playing that we have spent many years at Juilliard or Eastman School of Music not doing, he said. Jazzers can do it easily. I don't know how. Happy accident. Like much else about the Rhapsody, it came about almost by accident. Clarinetist Ross Gorman threw it in one day as a joke during rehearsals. Gershwin loved it, according to Charles Schwartz in his 1979 book Gershwin, His Life in Music, and told him to keep playing it that way. And thank goodness, Mokrinsky said, that sold it to us. What that siren wail at the opening of Rhapsody signaled is that the wail between and the wall between serious music and pop hitherto as solid as Jericho, was about to come tumbling down. Jazz in a concert hall? Actually, it had been done before. As early as 1912, James Reese, Europe's Clef Club Orchestra, had played Carnegie Hall, but he had not recast his music, as Gershwin had, in the form of a classical concerto. Gershwin himself played the piano at that first performance. Today, when pop musicians play Lincoln Center and rock operas open on Broadway, it's hard to imagine how revolutionary that seemed in 1924. What Hamilton was to hip-hop, Rhapsody was to jazz, the moment, for better or for worse, when it was embraced by the establishment. It was this idea of an American voice in concert music, said Bill Charlap, the Grammy-winning pianist who is director of jazz studies at William Patterson University in Wayne. Planting a flag, Gershwin was staking America's claim to musical seriousness. Did jazz belong on the same stage as Bach and Beethoven? Absolutely. Was Rhapsody's answer? Gershwin didn't invent the blues, Charlap said. He didn't invent jazz. None of these things. All he was saying was, take a look at this entire thing that is America. Black and white, rich and poor, and everything in between. This is the sound of us. Then, as today, Rhapsody seemed to capture the very soul of the jazz age. It was bold, brazen, gaudy, restless, romantic. You can't listen to those nervous rhythms and not think of a gum-chewing flapper. In hat and pearls, impatiently tapping her feet as she waits for her date to pull up in a Stutz Bearcat, Rhapsody, 100 years later, is problematic, imperfect, overplayed, and great, which is why, for all its issues, we still talk about it. It's a masterpiece, Charlap said. It touches people in a way they don't even know they're being touched. It's a painting of a time, a painting of a dream, a painting of possibility. Sure, there are areas in which it fails, but you can't forget the tunes. It sounds like America. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Why Does Your Voice Change as You Age? This is written by Melissa Petruzzello, Encyclopedia Britannica, downloaded on the 3rd of June, 2024. Your voice changes as you become an adult and may change even further as you age. The pitch of a person's voice depends largely on how tightly the vocal cord muscles contract as the air from the lungs hits them. A child's voice is high because the larynx, voice box, is small and the vocal cords are short, thin, and light. As a person goes through puberty, the larynx grows and the vocal cords lengthen and thicken, so the voice deepens. As adults age, the vocal cords become thinner, and the cartilage of larynx becomes harder and less flexible, altering the voice. Aging often changes the pitch of the voice, causing it to become higher in older men and lower in older women. In addition, changes in the muscles of an elderly person's larynx may give the voice a weak or quavering quality called vocal tremors. Changes in the torso, such as the development of a stoop posture or the lessening of lung capacity, can reduce the volume of air flowing through the larynx. further altering the voice. Michael McDonald with the Doobie Brothers, taking it to the streets, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, With Age and Sobriety, Michael McDonald is Ready to Get Personal. This is written by Tonya Mosley, May 20th, 2024, as heard on NPR's Fresh Air program. Even Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Michael McDonald says he feels and tells like a imposter sometimes. I don't mean to be self-deprecating when I say this, but I never really understood why people gave me so much credit as a musician, McDonald says. I really am just more or less a songwriter who plays a little bit of piano. It's an understatement. McDonald's singular sound that has captivated audiences for generations and has given life to remixes, remakes, and thousands of impressions from Tonight Show skits to The Voice. His new memoir, What a Fool Believes, which he co-wrote with comedian Paul Reiser, chronicles McDonald's childhood in Ferguson, Missouri, his early years as a session musician, and his decades-long career as a member of Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers, and as a solo artist. McDonald says that earlier in his career, he tended to avoid writing about himself directly in songs. But looking back now, he's noticed a shift in his music, which he attributes in part to becoming sober in the mid-1980s. More than anything, I think what people who suffer from addiction share universally is that we're kind of hiding from ourselves. We're kind of hiding from our feelings, he says. I've learned in sobriety to slowly peel back different layers. The intro of the song, Taking It to the Streets, playing in the background now, just kind of popped in my head, and I couldn't wait to get to the gig and set my piano up and pick the chords up on the piano. It just felt like an opening to a gospel song, and I loved gospel music at the time. What better motif for that very idea of people falling through the cracks of our society, and how do we do better by each other than a gospel song? It took me a minute to come up with Taking It to the Streets, because that came from the idea that we've got to do better by each other, or this is what is going to come to. It's going to be settled one way or the other. Maybe we can do it out of our love for each other and consideration and empathy before we have to do it out of frustration. In this interview, Michael McDonald reflects on such topics as how he eventually realized that white artists were receiving credit for the music created by black musicians, and more personally, how his voice has aged. And this is the song, What a Fool Believes, on which his new memoir is titled. McDonald says, the voice is a malleable instrument at best, and especially with age. It's like you're constantly renegotiating with it. I find that at my age now, I'm just trying to figure out what my strengths are and what I can use to put the song across. I wish in some ways I could sing with the range of the sense or pitch or whatever it was I had when I was younger. But unfortunately, those things change over time. I've been less reluctant to lower keys and stuff, and especially if it brings a better performance out of me, but I found that a lot of things have changed. I have to learn what still works for me when I'm singing, because I don't want to be trying to sound like I used to sound and have that be obvious. I want to just be able to do what I do best now. Wilco's Capital City introduces our local music news. Raleigh's Hopscotch Music Festival 2024 lineup is here. Check out who's playing. This is written by Kimberly Katadela-Tutatsky on May 31, 2024, newsandobserver.com. This year's festival will run September 5 through 7 in downtown Raleigh. Artist lineup. This year's Hopscotch Festival will feature more than 100 artists playing at two main stages and in clubs across downtown Raleigh. All shows, including club shows and downtown venues, are only open to festival ticket holders. We are incredibly excited about the diversity and talent in this year's lineup, said Hopscotch Music Festival director Nathan Price in a press release. Hopscotch has always been about discovery and community, and we believe 2024 will be our best year yet with such a fantastic mix of artists. Clubs include Lincoln Theater, King's, The Poorhouse, The Wicked Witch, Neptune's, and for the second year in a row, the festival will include comedy sets in addition to the musical acts. You can find all festival information and answers to frequently asked questions online at hopscotchmusicfest.com. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which famous composer almost became a mass shooter? Was that A, Ludwig van Beethoven, B, Hector Berlioz, C, Irving Berlin, or D, Johannes Brahms? And I gave as a giveaway hint that the composer's last name starts with the letter B. Correct answer is answer B, Hector Berlioz. As noted in interlude.hk, Berlioz was a promising young composer when he became involved with pianist Marie Moog, sometimes known as Camille Moog. They became engaged when she was 19. Berlioz traveled to Italy to compose, and while there he got news that she had broken off the engagement and married an heir to a major piano-making business. Berlioz was so infuriated that he got on a carriage to go to Paris carrying two pistols. He intended to shoot Moog, her mother, and then himself. However, his rage eventually abated, and he decided not to go through with his violent plan, in part due to the music that the world would lose out on if he killed himself at the start of his career. As Emily E. Hogstadt writes in interlude.hk on March 25, 2024, beyond a doubt, It's one of the most disturbing stories in classical music history. And the answer to our second question, what is the background to the name of our current month, June? Was it A, the Anglo-Saxons called June Letha, meaning calm or mild? Is it B, June is named after the Roman goddess Juno? Is it C, Junius, as the month was originally known, was the fourth month of the year in the 10-month calendar? Or is it D, all of the above, A, B, and C, are true facts about the month of June? Correct answer? Answer D, all three are true facts about the month of June. As noted in a Dictionary.com 2021 article titled, How Did the Month of June Get Its Name?, the Anglo-Saxons, who spoke that linguistic ancestor of English known as Old English, collectively called June and July Letha, which may mean calm or mild. So how did the sixth month of the year go from Letha to June? Well, June ultimately comes from the Latin Juno, referring to the Roman goddess. The name Juno itself appears to come from the Latin juventus, youth, which is related to words like juvenile and rejuvenate. In ancient Rome, Junius was the fourth month of the year in the 10-month calendar. Juno was an important and powerful ancient deity who became the protector of Rome, wife of Jupiter, queen of gods, and goddess of marriage, childbirth, and fertility. So, in recognition of this month's summer solstice on June 20th, let's close out today's program with another George Gershwin tune, Summertime. Time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.